All that we are. Try as we might, we cannot leave part of ourselves under the pillow with our pyjamas when we go to work. We bring all that we are to our workplace. In this collection of stories, Gabriella Brown shares insights from over 20 years of taking psychoanalysis out of the therapy room and into the staff room. It's a fascinating new book, and delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in the UK, I imagine, Gabriella Brown. Gabriella, good morning to you.
Good morning, Charles, and thank you very much for inviting me. I am in the UK, I'm in London, and I'm impressed to start with that you know how to pronounce my surname.
What, Brown?
Yeah, most people, that's because you're in Spain. Most people in the UK don't know how to say it, and they say Brown.
Brown, no, Brown, well, you know, it's a long story, but I am a Brown myself, but it's spelled differently. Anyway, let's move on from mispronunciations and all things like that, because we cannot leave. It's an interesting one, because we cannot... How to put that? I'm just trying to think of a way to put this. It sounds vaguely intelligent. But, you know, there's always been, people have said, well, you know, the thing is, at least whatever's going on in my personal life, I can go to work and shut the door, and my work life and my social or my personal life are completely divorced. This is absolutely not true, as your book, All That We Are, investigates.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's a really good question, because I think what I'm saying is we can't package ourselves and, you know, carefully leave bits of our personality behind and some of our emotions behind when we go to work. And for that reason, we need to be even more aware of what's going on in us so that we do maintain some boundaries between our professional and our work and our private lives.
I mean, we live now in a situation. We live in a situation, though, where, I mean, this is a timely book, because after the recent events, shall we say, of the past 2 years, the boundary between where our work life, well, a couple of things. There is the physical boundary of where our work life starts and our private life starts. And then there's the emotional boundary of where our work life starts and where our personal life starts. And then there is the intellectual or the mental where our work life starts and where our private life starts. It used to be a case, you know, BC, before COVID, that, you know, most of us, you know, like it or lump it, left the front door on a Monday morning, shut it behind us, and went to work and did a commute of some sort by underground, be it by car, bus, or whatever, and went to a workspace. And then we were cocooned in there from the outside world for a period of time, and then we got back in and we went back to the home. Now, the invention or the introduction of the internet and smartphones and a 24/7 work environment has changed a lot before the pandemic. And now, of course, for the past 2 years, most of us were told to stay at home and work from home. And suddenly we were letting the work environment into our home environment in a way that had never been done before.
I think that has been incredibly difficult for a lot of people. And I know, for instance, therapists who have seen clients from their bedroom. One guy I know was sitting on the floor because it was the one place that you didn't see the bed when he was seeing you. I mean, what an uncomfortable working environment. And that meant not only was his work coming into his home, it was in his bedroom, you know, in the most private place of the home. So I think the physical breakdown of boundaries between home and work has been really an issue. And as you say, that there's no transition now. You might, if you're lucky, walk downstairs. You might not even do that. And I think, therefore, we've got to create transitions in our minds. We can't leave parts of ourselves behind, and we weren't even leaving a physical space behind. So we have to create some kind of boundaries in our minds. And I think one of the ways that we do that, well, a couple of ways we do that. One is to be really self-aware. So to be aware of what our emotional state is and what might be being carried over from work into home life or vice versa. And the more we're aware of that, rather than pretending that nothing mixes up and that isn't true, but if we're very aware of it, we can stop ourselves acting on it. We're less likely to act on it than if we're pretending that it's all a very clear-cut divide. I think that's really important.
The thing is, I mean, this is very much, as we look at, why do we do what we do? Why do we work? And then people say, well, I know why I work. It's to put a roof over my head, it feeds my kids and the whole thing. That is a stress in itself. But when you've got a stress situation at home, be it perhaps the relationship you're in isn't nurturing, perhaps you've got the stresses and strains because perhaps you're a new parent. And despite all the adverts that you may see on TV where you all go running down a beach hand in hand together, and you have these perfect little darling kids, it might be a bit more different to that. And if Junior doesn't want to have his Cocoa Pops in the morning, that could spill out into your work as well. But it used to be, I'm a child of the 70s, dad went to work. That was it. Everything was finished. So he went to work. You didn't ask him about work when he got back. Mum did a few bits and pieces. But, it was very much, that was the, you were supposed to switch on into work mode and switch off into home mode. And nobody talked about work when you got home.
And that's not the case now at all. And I think there are good things about that we know that they meld more. But there are, for reasons we've been saying, bad things about that. And I think we do need to at least create buffer zones. So even if we're working from home, we need to say, OK, I am finishing my working day now. I think there have been problems where people have carried on working until 11 at night because they're in the same place and the computer's there and they might as well just get on. And then it's really bad for our mental health, for our work-life balance. So I think even if we're in the same physical space, we can think, okay, I'm stopping. I'm going to read a book for an hour. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to listen to music, whatever it is, that we're consciously creating a buffer zone between the two. But the other thing I think is that when we're feeling really stressed because, like, Junior didn't want his Cocoa Pops and had
other breakfast cereals are available, by the way, just in the things of balance, but there you go.
Oh, yes. And Junior had the most massive tantrum and we're like completely frayed before the day started. I think there are things, and that, that might be a relatively minor one. There might be much more serious things going on that we come into work with, wherever work is. And I think then we need to be very aware of if we're in a delicate place, if we're in a particularly sensitive place, if we're in a particularly vulnerable place, what do we do, to help ourselves? And again, the first thing I think is being aware of what we're likely to do and what we have to avoid. So avoiding sending the difficult email, not a good time when we know we're completely frayed and frazzled and we might send a not very well constructed email. And it's too easy to click send. So knowing that we have to leave that for a while, avoiding some really tricky situations where we're likely to be provoked, if we can. Of course, sometimes we can't. But if we're in a tricky situation, knowing that we might be extra likely to be provoked and kind of trying to talk ourselves down a bit, building in some stuff that is good for us, like, if we can, lunch with a friend or something, things that we know will help us. And maybe if things are really difficult in our home lives, maybe talking to someone at work about it, actually saying, look, I may not be at my best at the moment because it's going on for me.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because it also challenges the concept of, Japan has this culture of the salary man, which is, you go into work at some ridiculous hour, and then it's a competition to see who stays in longer and who, basically doesn't see their family. And they have massive amounts of heart attacks from stress and suicide and the whole thing. It isn't worth it. And then you have the situation where France, I think, was the first place to introduce legislation where you, as an employer, I cannot get hold of my employees via an app, via a smartphone, by a text message at certain hours of the day, because that is my sacrosanct time en famille. Yeah, that's my time with the family. And then there is the thing of we have the situation which you mentioned before, which is just because you are sent an email doesn't mean you have to respond straight away to it. Because you can get an email on a Monday morning that really sets your teeth off. And if you reply, because somebody might have had a bad weekend and send you off an email, and you may think, right, well, you know, have it thee, sir, madam, and send one back. And before you know it, you have set in effect a chain of events which can completely ruin your Monday. And if you have restraint of pen, tongue, and keyboard, then perhaps take the pause, put it in the let's do it in the afternoon box, and you might be able to get through the morning without having sort of a Game of Thrones type drama unfolding in your workplace.
Exactly, because that Game of Thrones drama can throw your Monday. It can throw a colleague or whoever else's Monday, but it can have repercussions long after Monday. It can be very hard to pull back from. So I think resisting, putting it into let's wait a bit email is so helpful. And then you come back and you read it again and you think, oh God, no, what was I thinking? No, I can't possibly send that.
Do you think it is more healthy for us to be able to interact in a personal environment? Because people are saying, oh, well, I quite like working from home. You know, I don't have to get dressed. I've saved a fortune on clothing. I spend a fortune on travel. But then again, we can have Zoom meetings. We can have emails. We can Skype and WhatsApp and whatever ourselves. And I've always got this thing about text and WhatsApp messages and emails, because you can misread a text message. You can misread an email. You can put voices and if your head's not in the right place, which is most of mine most of the day, those little gremlins can start saying, well, what they really mean is this. When with a conversation and with a person, when I can physically see, and I don't mean on a Zoom, but I'm physically standing in front of the person by the water cooler or in their office, I can pick up their, and I'm not going to start getting my crystals in order, but I can pick up their energy, I can pick up their how they're feeling, I can pick up how they're looking really without a filter, and that will help my response.
I totally, totally agree. I think it's dangerous for us to think, oh, fine, we'll just basically do business on Zoom now, because it doesn't really work. We need physical connection. On Zoom, we don't even look in each other's eyes. We're looking at a camera. We're not looking in the eye. And that has a physiological effect. There have been studies that have shown that it means that we trust each other less, because it breaks down trust. So I think it's really dangerous to think that we can replace in person. We can do some stuff, of course, online. I think that's been set in motion and that will be beneficial. But we have to find ways of also being in person.
You talk about taking psychoanalysis out of a therapy room and into a staff room or into a business setting. And I've been talking about how do we as individuals deal with the stresses and strains of domestic against business life. If I am a CEO, if I run a business, if a large business, if I run a small business, if I run a restaurant, how because it's all very well to say, oh, well, if your boss is giving you a hard time, take time out. But if you are the boss, if you run a small company, I mean, how important is it for you? And I'm not saying go up and, you know, hug your employer today, but how important is it as a business owner to recognize, to be, and here comes a word for out of the noughties, empathetic to what your staff is going through. But at the same time, you've still got to run a business.
I think it's hugely important, and in a way, never more so than now. Because we're entering yet another phase of the pandemic. We hope we're through the most awful part of it, but we're not out of it. And as people start going back into work, I think the chief exec has got to be, and all the leaders have got to be, so aware of the different states of mind people are coming returning to work in, whether they're returning to the office full-time, part-time, whatever they're doing. And some people will have been deeply traumatized over the last 2 years. We've all suffered loss. We've all suffered restriction. We've all suffered terror that we might die. Many of us know people that died. You know, we haven't gone through anything like this before. And we've reacted in different ways. So I think the boss has got to be very aware of what different experiences people are coming in with now. Some will be very eager to come in person. Some will be very reluctant and anxious about it. And I think there's something about this is a chance where we can think about putting our mental health at the forefront in the workplace. So the bosses can be thinking, how do I get the best from my team and run a successful business by actually thinking about what makes people well and not just responding when they're ill, but what makes us all well and how do we look after each other?
It's an interesting point you bring about people returning after, if you like, a mass trauma, because I suppose the only parallel you can draw here is people returning after you know, the war, really. And that's before, because you have a nation who suffered, or a world that suffered a trauma, people going in having experienced loss, people not sure, you know, the whole world has changed, you know, unrecognizably before. And you have to treat that workplace, you know, with, and the relationships with your other workers. You may not have suffered loss personally. You may not have had a hard time, but you will know somebody in who has lost a parent, a grandparent, heaven forfend, a child. And other people will be incredibly nervous about being in that environment.
Yes, they will. And I think it is being very sensitive to that. I think also now we know, which we didn't know after the major wars.
Yeah.
But now we know the importance of talking and how important it is to create safe spaces in which people can say, actually, I'm finding this difficult. Actually, it's making me really nervous just to be around people again. I've been basically isolated for 2 years, which won't be everyone's experience, but some people's experience.
It's interesting that you use that word isolation, because isolation is the killer. You will find that throughout any situation where people are suffering stress, whether it is from stress from a work situation, stress from something happening with their mental health, it might be a problem they're having problems with substance abuse or any sort of abuse, you know, the voice in your head will tell you to stay away and isolate. And that is only going to accelerate a downward spiral.
Yes, people who are isolated are much more likely to really struggle with their mental health, because we need other people around us. And the voice in our head, as you say, may make us want to run away, but we need the support of other people. We need to feel loved and love people or connect with people. That's vital for our mental health. So I think the workplace also, the bosses have got to realise that during the last 2 years, divisions will have built up for some people. Some people will feel very disconnected from others. There's the chance, as you were saying before, when we're on Zoom, we can easily, or doing things by text, it's so easy to become very paranoid about what's going on. When you can't actually look at somebody, read their body language and think, they didn't mean that in a bad way. They, on a text, you can think, oh, my God, they hate me, or they think I'm crap at everything. Or, you know, it's so easy to get into that state of mind. So there'll be people coming back in that state of mind. And we've got to now repair some of the divisions that might have grown up over the last couple of years and get a community back in the workplace.
A community back in the workplace. I mean, the time was obviously right to put this book together, All That We Are. Where did you draw on and what examples did you take from? This is presumably, you know, in your experience, in your professional life to put this together. But how quickly did the book come together? Did it kind of almost write itself?
No. No, it seriously didn't almost.
Marvellous, yes, okay.
It took me many years to write it, and little did I know that this would be such a good time. It started as a very different book. It's become narrative nonfiction through storytelling. It's come through my work, although all the stories are mixed about to protect confidentiality of my clients. And also in the end, what I did was put in a whole heap of myself, actually. So it's very exposing in terms of my own experiences, my own thinking, my own life to some degree, which surprised me, but feels right. Because I think otherwise there was a danger of me saying to people, look, this is what's happening to you, and I can sit on high and tell you I understand it, rather than getting alongside and saying, this is what we as human beings do, and this is what we are like, and I'm equally part of that. So it took a while, but it ended up being the book I really wanted it to be.
Are you hopeful that as we return to some sort of normality, that people will reappraise what it means to work, what it means to be present, what it means to interact with your colleagues, with your friends, with your family? And if you are the owner of a company, with your employees, you know, hopefully this might just give us the opportunity to a kind of gentler world, but at least one where the repercussions of what we've all been through are perhaps considered and taken into account, rather than just saying, right, we're back, nothing's changed, and off we go again, which would be disastrous for thousands of people.
Completely disastrous. We know that there was a mental health crisis in the workplace before the pandemic, a serious one. And for many people, work made them ill, miserable, incredibly stressed. It was not good. We do have a huge opportunity to rethink, to be, as you say, I think gentle is a very good word, to be a bit kinder to ourselves, to create workplaces that are good for us, not bad for us, and still very productive. Because if we're feeling good, we're more likely to work hard. I think we're on the cusp. There are a lot of people who really want to take the opportunity and rethink what we've been doing and how we've been doing it, and try and develop something better. And there's a major pull to just go back to how it was before, forget it ever happened, say it's business as usual. And as you say, that would be a disaster. And I really hope we don't fall into that.
The book is called All That We Are. It's by Gabriella Brown, who we've been speaking to today. Gabriella, if people want to find out more about you or about the book, where can they find you? Is there a website? Is there social media? Do you Twitter? Where can we find you on the World Wide Web thingy?
I'm on Twitter, and the handle is @BrownGabriella. And I have a website, GabriellaBrown.co.uk.
And it's just so in case you're wondering, it's Braun. It is the way we spell that. And it's also, the book will be available as a download from our virtual bookstore. This book is called All That We Are. It's by Gabriella Brown, who we've been speaking to today. Gabriella, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Giles. A really enjoyable conversation. Thank you.